Good morning, Angels.
Good morning, Charlie.
Angels, our next case has you heading to New York City to investigate the tax affairs of a former president.
Now, that's probably a little above our pay grade, Charlie.
Oh, it is? Angels, your next mission takes you to Washington, D.C. I'm hearing rumors that there's going to be an insurrection at the Capitol building.
Charlie, that happened 6 months ago.
It did?
Yep, and it sucked.
Charlie, don't you have any missions that are a little more our speed?
Angels, I need you to watch a needlessly gratuitous sequel that's loaded with famous faces and absolutely insane action sequences, and then pedantically pick it apart for an hour on something called a podcast.
Now that we can do. Thanks, Charlie.
And if you get a chance, can you maybe rescue me from inside this speakerphone? It's very dark in here, and I haven't eaten in months, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to die soon.
Bye, Charlie.
What skills are you putting on your resume if you want to become a Charlie's Angel?
You thinking about applying?
Well, I mean, I could probably use the money right about now. Sure, why not? You know, I could see myself flipping around like Eddie Gorder from Tekken.
Oh, yeah.
Are we allowed to lie?
The ability to do highly choreographed dance numbers to 90s hits.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else? Gymnastics. You got to be good at gymnastics.
Wire stunts.
Motorbike flipping.
Driving a Bigfoot monster truck.
Yes.
Them how defy physics.
A natural disregard for the laws of gravity. Sure, why not?
Very impressive.
If you master any of this, you can definitely use me as a reference on
nice.
This. I'll vote for you.
I guess you just put your application to Charlie, right? You just apply to
right.
Dear Charlie.
Yeah.
Your cover letter.
Go into witness protection.
And maybe they'll just handpick you for some reason.
Maybe. Welcome to Bad With Numbers, Season 2. That's right, we're back. I am Neff Knowles, joined as always by my fine, fine friends, Laura Medeiros.
Hello.
Roddy Gozum.
Heyo.
And Megan Swain.
Hey.
And we are talking this week about Charlie's Angels Full Throttle from the year 2003, directed by McGee, also known as Joseph McGinty Nickel. But, I guess McGee just rolls off the tongue a little easier.
I'd rather you say it at all times. McGee, if you could.
It's a little known fact, but McGee is kind of indirectly responsible for this podcast's existence because I kind of concocted the pitch to you guys to do a podcast about terrible movie sequels while I was watching McGee's sequel to The Babysitter on Netflix. I don't know if you guys saw that one, The Babysitter Killer Queen.
Oh yeah, he did do that. Yeah.
Huh.
And I was just sitting there thinking, damn, this is like one of the most unnecessary sequels I've ever seen. I wonder if there are any other unnecessary sequels out there. We've already covered 20 of them on this fucking show.
Yeah, that is a little known fact because I didn't even know that, so...
Yeah, I should have maybe told you guys. Sorry.
That's okay.
The origin story?
We'll put it in our fucking prequel series.
Oh!
McGee, man, he's made some absolute clangers. He made that first Charlie's Angels movie. Did you guys see that? Charlie's Angels, the 2000 original?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it.
I saw the Scary Movie 2 reference for it first, and then I watched Scary.
Did they spoof it in Scary Movie 2?
What did they not spoof? If it was presented in that year, they would spoof it that year.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back kind of spoofed it, I think.
Oh, with the jewel heist ladies?
I think so, yeah.
I was kind of into that first movie. I saw that first movie twice in theaters.
Well, they managed to get like good cast. Like, it had Sam Rockwell, didn't it?
It's got Sam Rockwell in there. It had Bill Murray in there. We'll get to him later, but... Yeah, and then I remember seeing Full Throttle when it came out and just being so over Charlie's Angels at that point and just felt it was completely pointless. And then watching it again last week for the show, kind of love this movie.
It's utter nonsense. but like in a good way. And it's, again, it's one of those movies you have to accept the nonsense.
It's all spectacle.
Yeah, this is a movie with a capital M, right? This actually feels, I don't know if it's just because we've spent like a year and a half stuck with streaming content where it all just feels, you know, smaller, but watching this, it just felt like watching a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
No expenses. What was the phrase? Basically, it was very expensive.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what the budget was on this thing, but it's definitely all there. Oh, the budget was 120 million.
120. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all up there on the screen.
Yeah.
And they made less than that domestically, right?
Yeah, I mean, this one kind of underperformed. That first one was huge, and then I think because this one came out in summer 2003, and that summer was just rammed with movie sequels. You had, as well as this, that summer you had Terminator 3, Too Fast, Too Furious, Matrix Reloaded.
Nice.
Legally Blonde 2, Bad Boys 2, Tomb Raider 2, Spy Kids 3D,
so many sequels,
and American Wedding all came out within like 2 months of each other.
Nice.
That is, I mean, we could do an entire season just on that 2 month period.
Summer of 2003.
Mm-hmm. Jesus. That would mean we'd have to do American Wedding and
No. No.
Oh, no. I don't want to touch. No.
Fucking pass on that one.
But how disappointing does that summer sound like when you go to the movie theater? It's like literally all those movies.
Mm-mm. What? No.
Too Fast and Furious? You think that's good?
Yes. Are you joking?
Really?
Oh my God.
I think that's the weakest one in that series for surely.
Not in the series.
No?
I say it is weak, right? It's not fantastic, huh? But it's not bad either. And I would also argue more so for Spy Kids 3D than anything else.
I definitely saw Spy Kids 3D that summer and probably enjoyed it more than a 23-year-old man should have done.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the one with Elijah Wood as the guy, right?
Okay, so maybe if we can somehow just not watch American Wedding, it'd be interesting to go back and watch those and give them their try. Maybe it'd be like Neth going back to Full Throttle and be like, well, this is unpleasantly surprised.
I like most of those. I mean, I'm not a fan of Too Fast, Too Furious, and we've already done Matrix Reloaded. Terminator 3, I think, is a bad movie with a great ending.
I agree.
Bad Boys 2, I think, kind of has been well covered by many other podcasts of a similar ilk, but I kind of like that movie.
I remember liking it.
I haven't seen Legally Blonde 2. I can't imagine it's very good. And mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen Tomb Raider 2 either.
She punches a shark, Neth.
Okay.
All right, well, now we're going to be...
Really?
Hell yeah.
Totally fit in to be... Lara Croft could totally be an angel.
Ooh, yeah. I want to see that crossover.
Good with defying physics?
But yeah.
Maybe good at chess?
Probably.
Were you guys familiar with the show? All of us are too young to have seen it when it first aired, but did anybody ever, like, catch reruns of that?
Oddly enough, no. I feel like that's something that should have been rerunning, but I guess the older shows that I watched when I was growing up were ones that my parents were watching on rerun mostly, and my parents didn't fucking watch Charlie's Angels.
No, yeah, it wasn't rerun when I was like a kid or growing up. Like, it was hard to find, so therefore I didn't watch.
Yeah, same. This wasn't really shown on TV when I was a kid anywhere. I mean, we were too busy watching like the A-Team and stuff like that. I kind of feel like it probably got a revival when the first movie came out, because that first movie was so fucking huge that I guess it, or it certainly at least fueled like a DVD box set or something.
Well, I remember when I was younger, there was a TV show that was very similar. Totally Spies was like,
oh yeah, I remember that.
where they all report to Jerry, but you could see him. So I guess that's the difference there. But I'm so sure that that's got to be, you know, some kind of inspiration to that TV show.
I mean, they did try and reboot the TV show about 10 years ago, maybe a little longer. And I think it aired like 3 episodes and it just got fucking pulled because it was no good.
Oh, that's sad.
So speaking of like this coming out in the summer of 2003, should we do the box office for that weekend?
Yeah. Yes.
Brilliant.
All right. So this movie opened on the 27th of June, 2003. Opened at number one, did 37 million on its opening weekend, which is not an untidy sum of money to be making on your first week. Number two that weekend was Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, okay.
That's a movie I have mixed feelings about.
I mean, it's a good movie to like discuss it in depthly about, because it's one where like you saw where it's Ang Lee. It's Ang Lee doing a Marvel film.
Yeah, I mean, it has a very distinct style to it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I guess they were leaning into the whole comic aspect a lot with the way that movie's edited and stuff.
Fuck yes, because like I remember one time years ago, my roommate and I were watching television, and a credit sequence or some scene or something came up, and it was doing all these weird like comic frames and like captions and shit. I guess we're like, what the fuck is this? They're like, this is terrible looking.
No, no.
Number three that weekend, Finding Nemo in its fifth week on its way to making so much money.
Solid film.
Yeah, I mean, Finding Nemo is one of the more kind of agreeable Pixar movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number four, a movie that you guys seem to get long after we got it in the UK. I mean, I guess it's a British movie because this was like a 2002 release for us. 28 Days Later.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Scary as fuck. Has one of the first movies to use running zombies as well, you know?
Oh, yeah. That was a game changer.
Uh-huh.
And then came everything else with the zombie.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Zombies that can love.
Oh my gosh.
Zombie tigers. No, 28 Days Later, that movie holds up. I watched it again recently. And the sequel is actually also pretty fucking good as well. So, and at number five, the aforementioned Too Fast, Too Furious.
Boom, boom. Awesome. Good stuff.
Just doesn't have enough Vin Diesel in it for my liking.
Yeah. Yeah.
They tried to hoist him from his own damn franchise. And look how it turned out for them.
I mean, Hobbs and Shaw isn't too bad and not really in there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? All right. Maybe I'd argue that a little bit.
But I mean, Hobbs and Shaw was just a direct response from Vin Diesel and The Rock just not getting along at all. So.
Yeah.
And also something to do with the two actors just really doing a good job riffing off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, I guess we should try and like break down the plot of this movie as fast as we can so that we can talk about some of the other shit going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this has our titular Charlie's Angels, played by Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, and Lucy Liu, on a mission to try and rescue an agent of the Department of Justice who's been kidnapped in Northern Mongolia. They end up rescuing him and find out that he was actually in possession of one half of a pair of rings that allow people access to the Witness Protection Program. It transpires that a former angel, Madison Lee, played by Demi Moore, wants these rings so she can sell them to the crime families that these witnesses are tied to and have these witnesses removed.
Gasp.
So the angels have to then recover the rings and figure out who Madison Lee is. And I mean, that's kind of it really for the plot. It's not the most overly taxing stories, but it seems kind of contorted all the same.
There's a subplot about Dylan, aka Helen, formerly dating the head of an Irish mafia.
Justin Theroux. Sorry.
Yeah, we get Justin Theroux as this this O'Grady character, Seamus O'Grady, doing one of the worst Irish accents I've ever fucking heard.
Pretty
in a
bad
movie.
I was wondering about that.
Holy shit, it's bad. Now, I like Justin Theroux.
Me too.
He was so good in The Leftovers, which is by far and away one of the best TV shows of like the last 10 years. He fucking sucks in this movie.
I think he just fit the requirement for like the male stars of like have abs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, he's packing a real fucking six-pack in this movie. You can't fault him there, but his performance is one of the weakest things about this film. So, I mean, this thing starts off with them doing this rescue mission, and the guy they're rescuing is played by Robert Patrick from Terminator 2 and countless other movies.
Yep.
And for the first kind of like 5-10 minutes of this movie, I was like, oh, this is just going to be a fucking headache of a film. You know, it's just going to be lots of shitty innuendos and crappy kind of fucking jokes. And
those are still there.
Oh, they're still. Oh, yeah. They're still there. But at the moment when they decide to drive a truck with a helicopter on the back off of the bridge and then jump in the helicopter and fly away with it, I just, I gave in. I was like, fuck it, I'm on board. Just give it to me. Hit me with your best shot. Just do it.
I wrote in all caps, just like, wait, what is this? What is this scene? it's just like there was no logic to it, and it's got that same Fast and Furious
it very much does yeah
feel to it, where it's just that 5-year-olds where they're like, and then they were driving a tank, and then it shot a rocket, and then the guy behind them shot a rocket, so then they dodged and jumped off a bridge, but there was actually a helicopter on their truck, so then they did that, and it felt very much like the new Battlefield 2042 trailer. so much like it, and it just made me even more hyped.
Can't wait for that game.
Oh, it's gonna be so good.
What was super enjoyable about it, though, for each of these scenes, you ask yourself, well, how the hell they're gonna get out of that? And usually you're like, oh, didn't expect getting out of that way. Like you said, how are they gonna get out of this whole first mission? Oh, let's drive a tank. Oh no, drive a tank that has like a helicopter on it, and then fall off that helicopter into some sort of dam and try to fly it. Like, I wouldn't expect that. Did anybody else?
No, I mean,
nope.
In fairness, it was in the trailer, but...
Yeah, it kind of resembles later Fast and Furious movies, more so than, like, ones that were concurrent with it.
Absolutely. It definitely wasn't in Too Fast, Too Furious.
This is some late-stage FNF action we've got going on here.
Well, I guess they found Discovered CG and they're like, well, let's try it out. Even we can tell it's fake. Well, let's just give it a shot.
Oh, yeah, a lot of green screen.
Oh, a lot of green screen.
Yeah,
and normally I'd rally against that, but with this movie, I just gave it a pass for all of the kind of shonky green screen. I was like, fine. If that's the way we're doing things, fine. Also, these three actresses just genuinely seem to be having a good time making this movie, right? I mean, this was Drew Barrymore's baby. She produced this. She had tried to get a Charlie's Angels reboot off the ground for a few years, and there was numerous iterations of casting that it went through until they finally settled on Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu. And Lucy Liu was kind of the outlier at the time because she was only really known for being an Ally McBeal. She hadn't really done a lot of other stuff, but she's kind of great in these movies. Really love her character.
No, she's a gem. Absolutely. And even in the credits where they're, you know, showing all of the goofs, it really genuinely seems like they are laughing at each other and the situations that they're in.
I thought you were going to dive into like the opening where it, like, went into the backstory. And like when we talked about how expensive this movie is, like just to look at each one of those segments, I was like, this is like 50 extras just to like play chess or just to monster trucks.
Monster truck. Oh yeah, yeah. Or she's birthing the calf.
Oh, that made me flinch with the blood splatter.
She flicks goo onto the guy's face, and she's like, "You hot water."
Yeah. I was just, oh, please no.
But like, I felt it really established the tone of what this movie was. Like that goop when it hit someone's face, I was like, "All right, this is the tone of the movie."
Well, I think that really is a subtle way to even kind of lead into Cameron Diaz's character, though, because she literally just sticks her hand in bird shit at some point.
She does the gross stuff.
Yeah, exactly. She knows how goopy it is and everything, so it's very clear that she knows what she's touching.
Let's talk about Cameron Diaz for a second.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel like Cameron Diaz is like one of the most underrated comedy actresses in Hollywood.
The range of stuff she's willing to do is amazing.
Exactly. She breaks out in The Mask in 1994. That's like her first movie. And everybody's like, wow, this girl's stunning. You know, she can dance. She can kind of like keep up with Jim Carrey in this film. And then she kind of disappears for a couple of years after that. And then she sort of starts popping up in a bunch of like indie titles in like sort of around 96. She's in a movie called The Last Supper, which is really good. She did a movie with Keanu called Feeling Minnesota, which is not really good and is kind of fucking terrible. And then she gets cast in the Something About Mary in 98. And apparently she was like the only choice for that movie. And she fucking nails it in that film. Like, Ben Stiller and Matt Dillon get all kind of the showier parts of that movie, but Diaz is so fucking good in that film. I literally rewatched it this week. Absolutely just one of the best structured comedies of the 90s. It's still fucking hilarious. And she just goes like stratospheric off the back of There's Something About Mary. She goes like right to the top of the A-list, because that movie ends up making like fucking $400 million worldwide. It's just an insane hit that year. And then she kind of starts juggling blockbuster stuff like Charlie's Angels with doing like interesting roles in things like being John Malkovich. Totally transforms herself for that role. She's so good in it. And also Richard Kelly's The Box. Have any of you guys ever seen that?
No.
That's the movie based on a Twilight Zone episode or a Richard Matheson short story maybe, about somebody turns up at your doorstep with a box and says, if you press this button, you're going to get $1 million. But some stranger you've never met dies.
Huh.
And look, that movie kind of got slated when it came out. I think it had like an F rating on Cinema Score, like the polling thing that they do with audiences. That movie kind of rules and is super underappreciated.
I might check that one out.
It's Richard Kelly, the guy that made Donnie Darko. It was like the last film he made. He hasn't made a movie since. So
okay. Huh.
But yeah, then she kind of like seems to like lose interest in doing movies like that around about sort of like 2009, 2010. And she starts just doing movies like Bad Teacher and Sex Tape. And she's like playing girlfriend roles in dog shit movies like Green Hornet. She kind of does like one last weirdo hurrah with The Counselor, which we have already talked about on our Cars 2 episode, in which she fucks a car. And then she plays Miss Hartigan in the remake of Annie, remake that came out in 2014. And then boom, she's gone. She hasn't made a movie since 2014.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I was just thinking about how much I miss all three of these actresses, and I don't remember the last thing I've seen them in.
I mean, she's great in
with Diaz, she marries fucking that dude from Good Charlotte.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They have a kid together, and she just seems to have zero interest in making any more movies, which, I mean, like, good for her if that's the case and you're just done with it and you feel like you've had your moment and it's passed. But like you say, I kind of miss her. I think she's kind of due for like a career resurrection. So, you know, Quentin Tarantino, get her in your next movie. Give her the fucking lead. She'd be great in it.
Why did you go to Quentin Tarantino?
Why did I go to Quentin Tarantino? Because he is notorious for reviving the careers of people like John Travolta.
Oh,
I mean, when Pulp Fiction came out, Travolta was like in the third Look Who's Talking movie. And that was it. Yeah. That's what he was fucking doing.
Also, she can dance. Her feet are sexy too.
Exactly. There you go. She's already got the appeal that Tarantino needs. I mean, she's a great physical comedian. She's she's good in drama when she applies herself. I just kind of feel like fucking I miss Cameron Diaz being in movies, man.
Yeah.
Is this your shout out to Cameron Diaz out there? If she's listening.
Love you, Cameron Diaz.
I mean, yeah, if you're listening, Cameron Diaz, get back in movies, you know, because I'm asking you to.
I hope that she thanks you in her acceptance speech when she gets back into
acting. I mean, that could be it for her, right? She could do so. She'd like, those kind of career comebacks are the sort of things that win people Oscars. That's the kind of attention that the Oscars love. Oh, it's a transformative comeback performance for Cameron Diaz in, I don't fucking know,
whatever she chooses.
Sure.
I feel like she has so much money right now that it's just like,
yeah.
Like, you don't have to go back. Making a movie is a lot of work. You have to, like, show up for these long-ass hours.
But then she should do it for the love, not for the money. If she's got so much money that she doesn't need to worry about money, then she can just pick whatever damn project she wants and just do that.
It's true.
Something really out there.
Or, you know what? Fuck it. Maybe they'll just make five and we can all just get in the fucking streetcar directly to hell, because that's what happens.
Yeah.
Who's driving?
Mike Myers be driving.
Anyway, so yeah, that was my little Cameron Diaz fan wank there. I think she's great, but I also think Drew Barrymore is fucking great, and I also think Lucy Liu is great as well. I think like all three of them just are perfect for this movie.
I think they're like super great. The only parts that always feel weird for me is the one where like they're trying to make it seem like they're really, really good friends when they could just go off there just acting alone. Like, there's one scene where they, like, okay, what do you guys feel like the MC Hammer dance? Because the whole thing, when they dance and then fell, and they were, like, laughing at each other, I was like, this is too much for me.
Really? I wrote in my notes, I was like, that Hammer Time scene was very cute and made me wish I had girlfriends to do that with.
Cute and very dorky.
But, like, that's what I mean. Like, I've never... Do girlfriends do that with each other? Do they, like...
No.
Like...
I wish.
Not in that coordinated of a way.
Right. Damn, that's all I want.
But like tripping and falling and laughing in sync and looking at each other eye to eye, like, ha ha. I was like, I don't know this.
When they bust out the MC Hammer dance, my eyes lit up. And as people may or may not know, you throw a fucking random dance sequence into a movie and you have my heart, movie. You have my heart. This movie has like four random dance sequences. And yeah, I was in love by the end of it.
Wait, okay. Hammer Time.
Panther theme.
They do, yeah, they do the Pink Panther burlesque show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there we go.
That was a good one.
Cameron Diaz does.
Was that the Pussycat Dolls?
Yeah, I think so.
Was that what? Was that the reason for that? Why that was there? It's like, why is this so long? It's like, oh wait, this is when Pussycat Dolls were super popular.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They do the fucking Cameron Diaz does the dance sequence at Luke Wilson's prom. His reunion. Because it'd be a bit weird if he was going to prom. Also, just of note in this opening scene in Northern Mongolia, it's like a blatant homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark with this drinking game that Drew Barrymore is playing. Don't get into a drinking game with Drew Barrymore, for fuck's sake. She would have drank under the table when she was 6.
Wait, based on this movie?
She was like an alcoholic by the time she was 7. Oh. Her upbringing was moy fucked up.
Nah.
That's why she didn't have much of an acting career in between Firestarter and the stuff that she did in her teen years.
She disappeared for most of the 80s and then popped back up in Poison Ivy in 1992 playing like this femme fatale character, and then she kind of like just traded in on that for a while.
Hmm.
And then she does Wedding Singer and like becomes like a super credible romantic lead.
Yes.
Her and Adam Sandler are adorable together in that movie. That movie holds up.
With this movie, like each one of those actresses, like I would go and watch any movie that they're in. Well, I don't know, X versus Sever.
Yeah, I was literally about to bring up X versus Sever, dude. I was going to say, let's not get carried away here.
She was really great in Futurama.
Oh, she was great in Futurama.
I mean, Lucy Liu did this movie and Kill Bill Volume 1 in the same year, and she's fucking awesome in Kill Bill Volume 1.
It's a good year for her.
Yeah, 2003. I mean, she's not... I guess she was doing that Elementary show, the Sherlock Holmes show, for like a good sort of 7 years, but she hasn't done many movies lately apart from those Kung Fu Panda sequels.
Oh, yeah, which she's not even like a huge kind of presence in, which always makes me sad.
I think that's the thing with doing like a Charlie's Angels and why probably the reboot didn't work as well is because you somehow have to capture the magic of getting 3 really great angels.
Yeah, I mean, that reboot was kind of a slog to get through. And look, I love Kristen Stewart. Yeah, I'm a Kristen Stewart stan. But that reboot was kind of tough. It was a little too kind of self-serious. It just wasn't really any fun.
But it also had a dance sequence, didn't it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, that movie came out like, 2 years ago, and I'm already struggling to remember much about it.
So, one thing I didn't know is that Bernie Mac's dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how I missed that.
He died in like 2008.
Which kind of sucks because he is also fucking hilarious in this movie.
Yeah. There's some rough jokes in there.
I mean, he's making a lot of kind of un-PC jokes in this film, but
yeah,
not gonna lie. Found them kind of funny because I'm an asshole, but I mean, so the whole deal with Bernie Mac playing Bosley in this movie is Bill Murray played Bosley in the first movie, and there was several stories went around from the production that not only did Lucy Liu slap Bill Murray for reals for him telling her that she can't act, which just seems a little fucking mean, Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And also apparently he headbutted McGee.
Yeah.
There you go. Over some minor dispute, he just like straight up nutted fucking McGee one, which is
honestly though, like kind of for no reason. I think that's funny. Me just attacked.
Bill Murray is a prickly character to deal with from everything I gather. So a few years ago, he rocked up at a house party near where I lived in Scotland.
Really?
Proceeded to get hella fucking drunk and then ended up like singing Scottish folk songs with the people that were holding the party. He has a tendency to just like do very weird idiosyncratic stuff.
Yep.
I've heard he's kind of a problem to work with, but you know, he's Bill Murray. I guess he could do whatever the fuck he wants, right?
Yeah, like Garfield.
Yeah, I do kind of love how they work it into how Bosley is taken over by Bernie Mac.
Oh, with the whole thing about like how Bosley's mum adopted Bill Murray's character.
Exactly, yeah. And how do you be a Bosley?
They've got a photo of him framed on the wall, and it is blatantly a publicity still from Groundhog Day,
yeah,
which is just like so lazy.
Yeah, I had that as a note. I'm like, isn't that from Groundhog Day?
Absolutely. From Groundhog Day.
So weird to see Shia LaBeouf too in that. Oh, yeah.
The cast of this movie is stacked, right? This is like a really loaded fucking cast. So yeah, we've got Shia LaBeouf playing this motocross kid who apparently is in witness protection because Justin Theroux killed his parents. Although, again, they don't ever really do much with that plot, Fred. Shia LaBeouf's just kind of hanging around in the background, which, by the way, I'm fine with.
Doesn't seem terribly traumatized.
Yeah. Right? Sure. Get him his paycheck.
I mean, I guess this was like pre-noted asshole Shia LaBeouf. This was kind of around the time he was still in like Even Stevens. He was still kind of Disney Channel kid or whatever channel Even Stevens was on. I don't know.
But he identified the medallion, which is from an orphanage.
Oh, that was hilarious. What was the odds?
He was at the same orphanage that it turns out Drew Barrymore and Crispin Glover's character went to. We'll get to him in a minute. This just looking at this cast though, right? So we get a fucking cameo early doors from Bruce Willis as a fucking Justice Department official who gets murdered by Demi Moore's character. This is kind of hilarious because they had literally just separated 6 months before filming this. So kind of wonder if that was intentional casting Bruce Willis as a person getting murdered by his ex-wife.
It said in the IMDb trivia, so I don't know whether or not this is spot on, but apparently he...
If it's on the IMDb trivia, promise you, it ain't spot on.
Well, then there you go. Yeah, so I don't know. I read this there, so take it with a grain of salt, but apparently he's a big advocate for adoption, and he asked because, I don't know, there was something about that.
He asked for a PSA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't know this.
From the actresses.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what it says there.
I haven't like looked.
He had noble intentions. Okay, that's very, very honorable of him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he shows up and gets shot.
I was wondering if that was him.
It was.
Yeah.
He's got like a weird wig on, as he does in many movies, because he's bald as fuck. We get Carrie Fisher playing a nun.
Yeah, that also, I didn't recognize her.
Second time in as many years that Carrie Fisher played a nun in a movie, because she plays a nun in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back as well.
Yep.
We get the fucking Olsen twins popping up in this movie.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
In like this little sequence where they're imagining like the new angels who they're going to be. And it's like Drew Barrymore in granny makeup and then fucking Mary-Kate and Ashley sat either side of her.
That's what I mean. This movie is just like, oh, dude, should we just have her like in granny makeup? Like, that's a lot of time, buddy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, for like just, a 10-second insert. Sure, why not?
It's so short. Like, that's the thing. This movie has like... these extreme scenes for like barely a limit of time. Like this is a whole sequence. And like we talked about the nun, like it's whatever, but that's a big sequence to go. First off, dress up as nuns and like get Carrie Fisher.
Like, they're playing a song from The Sound of Music. It's like, called The Lonely Goat Herd, apparently, the puppet show song.
Huh.
Getting the licensing rights for that song.
Yeah.
Just so we can add this one bit about the orphanage and tying that back to the Thin Man. I was like, this is expensive.
They even mimic the bit from Blues Brothers with the desks where they're like...
Which Carrie Fisher is in Blues Brothers, right? So it kind of it all ties in quite fucking nicely. Just carrying on about who else is in this cast, we've got Robert Forster playing like the head of the FBI, RIP, miss that guy, so fucking good in Jackie Brown. We've got Melissa McCarthy makes a little cameo in this movie.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of...
Yeah, that was weird.
It's like a pre-fame Melissa McCarthy. Now, the reason she's in this movie is because she's friends with the screenwriter John August, because she's also in the movie Go, which was written by John August, and she's also in...
John August wrote this?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And she's also in The Nines as well, which John August directed, so she crops up in like a load of his stuff. We get Eric Bogosian, formerly from our Blade Trinity episode, playing a fucking corpse. He has like literally no lines of dialogue. He's just the dead body that they go to find, like, from he was part of the witness protection program. Chris Pontius from Jackass shows up in this movie.
Oh yes.
Now, apparently, Bam Margera's in this as well, but I couldn't actually see him anywhere.
Yeah.
Not complaining about that. That guy has... that guy's recent history is somewhat spotted, so, you know...
Yeah, really sad.
It kind of sucks what happened to Bam Margera. We've got Matt LeBlanc. He was in the first movie... playing Lucy Liu's boyfriend. He's meant to be like this kind of Tom Cruise action star.
Really? I was like, oh, he's just Joey in this.
He's got this big fucking movie premiere that the climax takes place in, right?
And he keeps talking about how they're on a break, except he doesn't use the term break. He says
timeout.
Oh, you think that was like a direct reference to Friends?
It was absolutely a reference to Friends.
Like, along with the cameos, like, when I watched it again, I was like, man, there's so many references to just other movies.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of parodies, but, like, oblique ones and not so oblique, like the CSI.
Oh my god, sequence. The CSI. So good.
Very 2003 CSI.
If I was going to make a time capsule and I had to put something from 2003, like a movie from 2003, so, like... Return of the King wins Best Picture that year. I ain't choosing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Matrix Reloaded is one of the biggest movies that year. I ain't choosing that. If I want to choose a movie that exemplifies 2003 in perfectly compacted nutshell, it's going to be Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, because everything about this movie just reeks 2003. Like you say, the CSI parody, the fact that there's motocross in this movie is so 2003.
Yeah. And Pink.
In this movie. Uh-huh. It's 2003. It has fucking this Fatboy Slim sanctioned remix of the theme song. So 2003. Mm-hmm. It has luging in it, for fuck's sake. There is a scene where Lucy Liu luges behind Robert Patrick's car, and I'm like, nobody has luged since 2003. Nobody fucking does that anymore.
Yeah.
This is just the perfect encapsulation of that year in movie form.
It's kind of nostalgic watching this.
Jason had a Walkman, but like a CD.
Discman.
That was it.
Yeah.
And seeing that again, my heart just almost came out of my mouth. It's just
pre-iPod?
Want it. Yeah, man.
It's pre-iPod. Oh my gosh.
He's like bouncing along listening to that thing, and I'm like, yeah, that's skipping all over the place.
Those things did not work like that. You could not just fucking walk with a Discman.
But he's rich. He can afford the good one,
I guess.
There is no good one.
If you pulled at the right angle.
Yeah, also John Cleese plays the dad.
So good. Loved him.
And they keep kissing on the lips.
John Cleese plays Lucy Liu's dad, and his kind of role in this movie is to just hang out with Matt LeBlanc. Well, Matt LeBlanc describes what Lucy Liu really does for a living. And John Cleese's go-to is she's a sex worker.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And he seems absolutely distraught by this fact.
But so supportive.
Yeah.
Can we just say?
He attempts to be
supportive. That's true, he is.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, Matt LeBlanc doesn't frame it particularly well. His character is kind of an idiot. Yeah, and also we have Luke Wilson. I mean, I guess we mentioned him already, but we have Luke Wilson playing Cameron Diaz's boyfriend as well.
And the lesser-known Wilson brother playing a cop.
Yeah, Andrew Wilson, who was in the movie Whip It, which was directed by Drew Barrymore. So I guess it's all kind of fairly insular. Whip It's a cool movie.
When I was watching it with Brian, he was like, Is that Owen Wilson or Luke Wilson? Like, he was pointing to the cop guy. I'm like, that's neither.
Andrew,
I don't know what
Wilson.
You're talking about. And then, later on, it turned out it actually was one of the Wilson brothers.
Yep.
Hmm.
And, of course, we have Crispin Glover reprising his role as the thin man from the first movie, or alternatively just playing himself. Who fucking knows with that guy? I don't even know if this is a performance or if it's just him being him.
Well, I was actually just talking to a friend yesterday, and he said that the reason that the thin man doesn't say any lines is because Crispin would, refuse to say anything, because basically he was just using this to film his other films.
Yeah, that sounds...
Or fund his other films.
That sounds about right for his MO. He, he's a kind of weird one. I mean, look, I love him in this movie. I think his character is just insane. Mm-hmm. It's just an insane performance. And I kind of like the fact they retcon him into almost being a good guy by the end of the film. Like, he gets this little moment with Drew Barrymore where it almost looks like they're about to hook up, which I was kind of rooting for that to happen.
Yeah. She loves the bad guy.
But then Justin Theroux kills him, so...
That's sad.
Yeah.
It looks like they're going to kiss, and then he grabs her hair, and then suddenly she's holding his hair at the same time, and she, sniffs his hair in front of him.
She kind of tries to copy his, habit of sniffing people's locks of hair, and it's very weird and kind of... I wish this movie lent into that a little bit more. I kind of felt like there wasn't enough Crispin Glover in this film.
So I was really kind of confused with all of the Irish references that... Bernie Mac was giving. What was any of that except for Lucky Charms? that I got.
The Irish stuff in this movie is not great. I mean,
when Bernie Mac rocks up, they're like, there's like Irish jigs playing, like penny whistle jigs playing, mm-hmm. while these guys are working on the docks. I'm like, but you really think that's what they'd be listening to, huh? The Irish mafia, they're listening to jigs and reels.
And the guy that interrogates him, might I add, is the most Scottish person I've seen in a film in quite a while. I'm like, come on, movie.
Is there a Scottish mafia?
I'm not allowed to say.
Oh, okay.
That's our true crime podcast that we'll be launching on Patreon this October.
Oh my.
Bad with Crimes. No, that's a terrible fucking name. Yeah, so yeah, Drew Barrymore was also part of this witness protection program because she testified against Justin Theroux, who was like her ex-boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, they revealed that her real name is Helen Zass.
Oh, so good.
And I am just a sucker for a good comedy name, and that is a choice comedy name.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie Paul.
The one with the alien?
Mm.
That movie's kind of mediocre, apart from, and I don't remember laughing this hard at anything in a movie theater ever. They do a reveal all the way through the movie. Jason Bateman has been playing a character called Agent Zoyle, and they reveal at the end that his real name is Lorenzo Zoyle, as in Lorenzo Zoyle, the Nick Nolte movie. I just found that shit fucking hilarious because I love a good comedy name.
I love the stretch on that.
Yeah, I mean, but, I was the only person laughing at that joke in the theater because I'm probably the only person that remembers the movie Lorenzo's Oil.
Mm-hmm.
Holy fuck, that was some good writing.
You're like the idea that they were just sitting in the room and they're like, that one guy who's going to know what we're talking about, it's going to be good. And they were right.
Hats off to Simon Pegg and Nick Frost because that joke got me in that movie. I was massively indifferent to that film right up until that point. And then I was like, yes.
I really liked how the girls leaned into picking on Dylan afterwards, but realistically, I think my favorite out of it, I think Alex says it, that she'll be the butt of every joke, because that one, they were really kind of going hammy, but then that one is just so subtle.
Oh no, and there's a more subtle one when she says she's gonna take it to the lab and analyze it.
Oh yes, yeah. But there were so many good jokes in this that I did not understand when I was younger. It just went completely over my head. So rewatching this now that I can, you know, understand.
Sure.
It is true, like, if you were quite like the prudish person and knew nothing about sexual innuendo, a lot of these scenes would be straight up just like random talking.
No, I mean, I was 8 when this came out.
They go hard on the innuendo. See what, yeah. See what I did there?
No, yeah. Just everything. That's why when you said, like, can't remember, when you were saying the box office 2003 was really rammed, I was like, oh, is he doing the Charlie's Angels thing?
Sure. No, but I'll take credit for it. I mean, also the soundtrack to this movie as well, we should probably speak on that, because this thing is stacked with some real bangers on it. They obviously licensed out The Prodigy for this movie because,
yeah,
holy shit, they use Firestarter by The Prodigy a lot in this film.
Yeah, I've had it stuck in my head all day.
Because they went, well, like, the action scenes and all the thing. How would you, like, what was your fave action scene in this movie? Because, like, whenever I think of this movie, I find myself just wanting to, like, remember, like, oh, the motocross action scene. Like, they're fun things to just pop in and just watch.
I mean, the motocross action scene is, like, ridiculously over the top, right? It's like,
people keep getting murdered by motocross bikes.
Yeah, they just keep exploding. That was crazy to me.
Very murdery race.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, that scene. I kind of feel like that scene almost drags on a little too long. I like the fight in the docks that they have with Justin Theroux's henchmen.
Yeah.
Because that's like legitimately a brutal fight. Like, we've been kind of doing like campy comedy action up until that point, but it gets real fucking violent in that scene, and there's some real bone crunching stuff going on there. I think, like, the stunt work in this film is particularly good.
Now, was it true that Drew Barrymore didn't want the angels to have guns? Because if so, they did a great job.
Yeah, that was kind of her take on the material. Is she's vehemently anti-firearm, and in the TV series they used guns, they were armed, but in these movies, zero use of guns from the angels. Now, everybody else in the movie is carrying guns.
Yeah.
kind of puts the angels at a bit of a disadvantage.
Which makes it cooler.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
they can defy physics, Neth. They are at the advantage.
Yeah, I mean, like, we talked about how stacked this cast is. One person not appearing in this movie is gravity. Holy shit, they're just flip-flopping all over the place. It's insane.
Well, even in the opening scene, I know I'm going back, but, like, it always gets me is, like, how the hell does Drew Barrymore slide under the table? Like, what thrust?
Like, oh, when she, like, literally bends over backwards? Yeah.
Yeah.
Goes on the table.
I was just trying to figure out how the fuck they shot that. Did they have her on, like, some kind of fucking invisible platform or something? I don't know. It's crazy.
I think she bent and then the table came over her. They moved the table instead of her.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
This is like when Penn and Teller ruin somebody's magic trick.
Sorry.
That's how they did it.
Like, that made no sense. Like, even in the motocross, when they, like, flipped over, kicked their guns, and started shooting, I was like, what?
So good.
Yeah.
But then they're all dodging, and, like, it's going under their arms, and, you know, the bullets are so cool. You should probably put that on your resume, Neth, is Matrix dodging.
Yeah, look, this movie and also the first movie are very Matrixy in their action. I mean, that was just kind of the standard for action movies around that time, was everything had to be wire work. Everything had to be like weird slowed down shots. I mean, that's just part of like the Matrix's reach and its influence on movies, I guess. But this movie owes a big debt to the Matrix.
Oh, absolutely.
Why is Bernie Mac dressed up like a crossing guard when they try and intercept Robert Patrick after they find out that Patrick's actually a bad guy? This is during the luge sequence. The idea is to have Bernie Mac as a crossing guard stop Patrick's car. They're like out in the middle of the LA canyons, and he's got like a bunch of kids there. Where the fuck are these kids going?
Who are these kids?
Are these kids like going to hike to school for 4 hours? Maybe a couple of them get like picked off by coyotes. Maybe one of them gets a rattlesnake bite. I don't understand why he's got all these kids out there in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, I understand why he's there. It's he's the plan B.
Yeah, absolutely.
In case...
But where did he get all these fucking kids from?
Yeah.
Well, he basically took them on a really long walk and decided to like crosswalk them all the way to that point.
So basically what Bernie Mac has done is abducted a load of children.
In order to use them for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, to just basically throw them in front of Robert Patrick's car if his plan doesn't work, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what if Robert Patrick hadn't stopped?
Yeah, what if he just plowed? Oh, I don't, you know what? It could have been awful. And also, we get this reveal at the Griffith Observatory in LA that Demi Moore is like the bad guy in this movie.
Okay, to go on that reveal though, like, did that shock anyone? No, right?
No.
Okay.
No, I think it's kind of evident from the very first scene of the film that she's the bad guy.
That's what Brian said when we were watching it. He was like, oh, she's the villain. And I was like, oh, I want her to be in a Charlie's Angels movie, but like as a star.
Great casting though. I could see her totally as fitting into like another Charlie's Angels movie with Demi Moore. Like, she just fit.
I'm pretty sure they tried to reboot this franchise in the early 90s. And I'm 99% certain that her name was on the list of people they wanted to cast. So maybe it's some kind of bizarro alternative universe where she really was in a Charlie's Angels movie.
Wait, now that I think about it, you went on your Cameron Diaz, but like, I also kind of miss Demi Moore.
Yeah, I mean, she made some great movies, and then Striptease came along in 96, and she was the highest paid actress in Hollywood at the time. That movie was an unmitigated flop, and it's also a terrible fucking movie.
Oh, is it?
And her career just fucking tapered off after that, because she was like the go-to for leading ladies in the early 90s. I mean, off the back of Ghost. I mean, Ghost was such a fucking huge movie when it came out.
Because you think, I guess that's the fickle nature of Hollywood. You get to have a flop and then it's over for you.
I mean, doubly so if you're a woman, right? I kind of feel like she fucking was at a disadvantage there straight away.
Yeah, Striptease was not viewed in a very favorable light from a moralistic standpoint at the time that it came out.
Sure.
People were like, why is there a movie about stripping?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, almost it feels like nowadays that would be a more kind of acceptable movie, right? Like, I mean, a movie like Hustlers portrayed that profession in a much more kind of flattering light than than something like Striptease maybe did.
Yeah, because she just plays a woman that's like supporting her, because she's like a single mom or something, isn't she?
I mean, look, it's a bad movie, but it's not a bad movie because it's about strippers. It's a bad movie because it's like a, it's meant to be like a farcical comedy, and it doesn't work.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's a it's a comedy. Oh. It's meant to be a comedy. It's just not a fucking funny movie at all.
Oh, I didn't realize it was a comedy.
Yeah, no, it totally is.
I thought it was more of a drama, like it's the tragic, you know, the tragic woman who's, you know, working hard to make ends meet.
No, not at all. No, because she's, like, involved in some blackmail plot.
Oh.
Where she's trying to blackmail, like, Burt Reynolds' senator or something. He's, like, this guy whose kink is, like, filling boots with Vaseline or some shit like that. I don't know. But, yeah, just a bad movie. And it kind of, like I say, it kind of killed her career, which sucks because she was, like, you know... She's great in Disclosure. She's really good in Ghost. I mean...
Yeah, she kind of disappeared. I'm looking, like, her last thing is, like, I don't know, like, Songbird. And that was that, like, random pandemic movie with the guy from... Riverdale. There we go.
You know what you can do with all these pandemic movies that are starting to trickle out? You can fucking keep them. I don't need them. I don't need that in my fucking entertainment. I literally just live through that shit. Don't need to be watching movies about the fucking pandemic.
Yep.
Yeah, people have said that. I remember throughout the pandemic, everybody was like, oh, there's going to be all these movies about the pandemic. I'm like, the fuck there will be.
Well, you know what? Hollywood isn't going to miss an opportunity to cash in on people's recent nostalgia.
Like a decade from now? Yes, absolutely. But in the immediate aftermath, nobody's going to want to think about that. It just...
I mean, you say that, but that Oliver Stone World Trade Center movie came out 5 years after 9/11.
Yeah.
And nobody fucking wanted it, and yet there it was.
Would you want a Charlie's Angel 3? With... Oh, wait, we did get... Oh, no. Bringing them back.
The reboot exists in the same universe as this movie because Lucy Liu, Cameron Diaz, and Drew Barrymore are all pictured. They're in a picture in the movie. They don't turn up in the movie, but their photo is in a movie. So that Elizabeth Banks reboot is kind of Charlie's Angels 3. I don't know.
Soft reboot.
Yeah. No, I'd love to see them back as them. I don't know what they would do, because, I mean, how do you top this? But...
Well, it's one of the ones, like, when you talk about Fast and Furious, imagine if it somehow got that many, became a franchise like that. Like, it would be amazing if there was, like,
oh, my God.
We live in an alternate timeline where, like, Charlie's Angels became the Fast and Furious of
I mean,
our
look,
generation.
If that was the timeline we were living in, guarantee you this much, it ain't taking them 9 movies to get to space. They're doing it in 3. They're up. They're on the ISS by that 4th fucking movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fuck, I'd like to see it. Like I say, I mean, okay. So when we talked about doing this movie last season and we were kind of like, oh, that's a cagey one. Like nobody was sure of the quality of this film. And I distinctly remember not liking it when it came out. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like I said up top, kind of love this movie. Kind of think this movie is so ridiculous and so like over the top that I actually found it pretty charming to watch. I was kind of like, this film's so fucking silly, and I just kind of needed silly.
Yeah, it's very over the top, and because this isn't 2003 anymore, the references are kind of quaint and nostalgic rather than obnoxious. Like, I personally think that when I watch a movie that has an obnoxious number of references to things that are very recent, I don't like it. I find it annoying.
I can think of a certain movie that we're going to be doing later on in this season that does that. I'm not going to mention its name right now because it's I kind of feel like this, like I say, this is a very 2003 film, right?
Yep, very high. Like the visuals are very kind of high saturation, colorful imagery.
And I think that's one of the things I liked about it is so many action movies nowadays are just shot through like this murky brown filter, right?
Yeah.
And this movie is vivid. There is like so much color and so much life in this film.
Yeah, this movie is more entertaining than it has any right to be because like it's actually shot in a way that makes sense for the movie and it just works. Like the way it's shot works for the movie. Usually when I watch shitty action movies, the cinematography is usually shit, but in this one it isn't.
It never like lets up. Like even when like the cargo, like the on the ship scene, like literally how that ends is they all somehow grab onto a rope that's flying up. they coordinate themselves and they flip themselves over so they kick off and break the ceiling. And as they kick off, pieces of wood fall off that are the perfect size to skateboard on the cargo ship rope all the way down.
They surf on pieces of wood.
Exactly. And then as they're leaving to make sure they doesn't get through, they somehow make a makeshift fire throwaway floor and do a whole barrier, a wall of fire to stop Justin Theroux.
And, like, and yet Justin Theroux still fucking walks through it like he's the Terminator from T2, right?
Oh my god.
I mean, all right, I don't want to keep ragging on Justin Theroux as being the weak link in this movie, but the way they introduce his character is they use a lot of the motifs from Scorsese's Cape Fear, like the whole kind of like four notes on the piano score. Yeah. They've got him in prison with all the tattoos all jacked up, and I'm just like, we've done Cape Fear. Like, you can't do parodies of Cape Fear after The Simpsons did a parody of Cape Fear, because that Simpsons episode with Sideshow Bob is so fucking perfect that just trying to ape that afterwards is just like such a pointless endeavor, right?
Yeah, because what's her face crawls under the car, and we were joking how he was running her over, and then I was like, is she clinging to the bottom of the car? And he was like, what is this Cape Fear thing? Yeah. And then it drives away, and then it's like, oh no, they were behind the thing.
Oh yeah, the magic tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, behind the surfboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, also kind of a nod to Point Break in this movie as well, with the whole identifying the criminal through the wax that they use on their board. I say like a nod, they just straight up stole that from Point Break.
Is that grape? It's grape!
Oh, God. When she licks the credit card. I mean, Cameron Diaz is doing some weird, gross shit in this film. Between, like, sniffing bird poop and licking the credit card, I don't know.
Well, Bernie Mac licks people's surfboards on the beach.
Do you think he improvised that bit where he just slapped that guy's stomach?
Bernie Mac improvised a lot of this movie.
Yes, I think so too.
He's like mumbling gags to himself. I mean, this was a good year for Bernie Mac because he did Bad Santa this year as well. Mm-hmm. And he's fucking hilarious in Bad Santa. So
that makes sense, because in the ending with the outtakes with Melissa McCarthy, it's like she said something about patch, and then it's like, I want to see your patch. It's like, oh God. But that fits the sexual end of the movie, but then like, oh, that makes sense. That's why.
Yeah.
She was caught off guard with that, so probably a problem.
It's Bernie Mac. The guy was fucking hilarious and is sadly missed.
R.I.P.
Bernie Mac. Also, we didn't even mention it when we were talking about like cameos. We get a cameo from Jacqueline Smith, one of the original angels, like appears to Drew Barrymore in a bar. And
as like an actual angel, an apparition? What was going on
there? Yeah, because she just fucking straight up disappears. I'm like, oh, okay, so this movie just literally went full on supernatural at this point.
Why not?
Well, the way they even lit it, I was like, all right, cool, we're going there. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, so the movie kind of reaches its climax at the premiere of Matt LeBlanc's action movie, which by the looks of the poster is just like a straight ripoff of Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see what this movie is, because if this movie is just an opening of Matt LeBlanc climbing some rocks, and then it's just 2 hours of him eating a variety of sandwiches, and then it ends with like, I don't know, a motorbike chase, that's already a better movie than Mission Impossible 2. Mission Impossible 2 would be an episode that we would do if it wasn't for the fact that it is so fucking boring.
Oh no.
It's such a dull fucking... And I love that franchise. Like, that is the outlier in that franchise because it sucks to high heaven. The rest of those movies are fucking great. Mm. But Mission Impossible 2, holy shit, what a bad fucking film. Mm. So yeah, anyway, the point I'm making is that Matt LeBlanc's movie is meant to be Mission Impossible. So they go to the premiere and Demi Moore is planning on fucking selling all of this witness protection stuff to all these gangs that show up. They have a big fight on the rooftop. Glover and Theroux both die at this point. And then we get this insane fucking car chase through the middle of Los Angeles.
Wait, you forgot one that explodes and then she puts on her dress cape and flies off the building.
She has a fucking wingsuit built into her dress. What the fuck?
I was like, is she Batman now?
She's Batman, and the others are like some makeshift Tarzan or Spider-Man, where they somehow get a long enough like light bulb rope to swing and catapult onto her car.
It's kind of awesome. And then they have this amazing car chase that ends up with the car like crashing into this theater. And this theater looks great. I'm assuming mm-hmm. this is somewhere in LA, this theater, but what a mm-hmm. fucking amazing building this is.
But like, there was no practical scene where Lucy Liu, when the car crashes, where it starts rotating and a centrifugal whatever force somehow pulls him away. But this is a shot where like, it looks so hard, like painful, of like both Drew Barrymore and Lucy Liu. Drew Barry falls down, goes down like hard on these escalators. Stairs? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lucy Liu like does a full impact on a glass.
Yeah, like, no, I definitely thought to myself, like, damn, Drew Barrymore got like the short end of the stick there, because I'd rather just go through a fucking window than down yeah. a flight of fucking subway stairs.
Yeah.
But my like, God.
I mean, they should both be legally dead at this point, because
exactly.
mm-hmm.
one of many instances in this movie where they should just straight up be dead, right? You know?
No, yeah, they should be dead, but all it is like, oh no, I got a bruising on the my abdomen and like maybe like dislocate a arm.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie's a cartoon. This movie, yeah. for all intents and purposes, is a fucking yep. cartoon, right? Because
I slipped down of like my front steps in mm-hmm. flip flops when it was raining once, and I now have a permanent dent in my ass.
Jesus.
Like, I literally, the muscle is not doing okay. I would have to go to rehab to get my butt fixed. So you can't tell me that she's walking away fine.
I don't want to make light of your injury, but I genuinely thought you were going to say that you now have a crack in your ass.
Well, I mean, my ass is cracked. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I think it's a given, even though maybe they should have done a disclaimer of, like, please don't try these stunts at all.
Oh, you think this movie should have had, like, a Jackass warning at the start?
I mean, Pontius yes. is in it,
there
so...
There you go, Pontius and apparently Bam Margera are in it, so, yeah,
I
why not?
I feel like that's a lie.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the Wikipedia and it's in the trivia, but I was kind of scouring for his distinct features and they were not evident anywhere in this movie, so I don't know. Maybe he was just cut out of the movie. Maybe they fucking Christopher Plummered him with somebody else, ooh. I don't know.
So now we reach this point in the movie, though. How did you feel about that emotion? Obviously, they had this, like, thorough line with, like, the Drew Barrymore and she's Helen's ass, and, like, they're worried about if they would be friends still if, like, if one of them got married. So when there's that scene where she's fighting down like Cameron Diaz is fighting like Demi Moore, and then she goes like, you have one thing, I have one thing that you don't have. I kind of chuckled when she went, friends.
That is a real sick burn on Demi Moore. Like, how does she know what Demi Moore's social status is like? Yeah. Demi Moore might have, like, lots of friends. Maybe they were just busy that evening. I don't know. Look, the emotional through lines of this movie are not great, yeah?
No,
there's not a lot of character development. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, oh, they're a bit worried that maybe Cameron Diaz is going to marry Luke Wilson and not be an angel anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, you guys can still fucking hang out. Like, people leave jobs and still hang out, you know?
Yeah, the thing with the list of people in witness protection, like, the thing that I don't get is that after What's-His-Face gets the rings initially, why the fuck does he care if they get them back? Because you'd think he would have downloaded the list already, or printed it, or written it down.
Who, wait, Justin Theroux's character?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he has them. That's the whole point of them going to the dockyard, right? Is to get the fucking rings. Yeah, exactly.
He already has them, so he already has the list.
And also, I mean, I'm assuming this is like the FBI or somebody's list of witnesses. Really, guys, you're going to use two things like rings as your fucking decoding device? I mean, come up with something better. Yeah, come up with something a little more fucking secure than a pair of fucking rings that have to be placed together. I don't know.
Sorry, I just imagine this movie came out and like the Pentagon was sweating. Oh, they knew about the rings.
They're like, well, cross that off the list of security measures we were going to use.
God.
I mean, and also that whole plot MacGuffin thing is just another steal from Mission Impossible, right? Like, the first Mission Impossible is all about them stealing, like, the CIA knock list of fucking witnesses. I mean, originality is not Charlie's Angels Full Throttle strong point.
No.
But goddamn, I had fun with it.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's spectacle. It's very Very spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, it ends with this fight, and they basically, they kick a gas main loose, and Demi Moore falls through the floor and then shoots her gun directly at the gas main, which is a really dumb fucking idea. Mm-hmm. Creates this raging inferno below this theater, but doesn't seem to have any effect on, like, the wooden stage that they're all fucking standing on. I don't know. Just par for the course with this film at this point. And then they all go and meet up with Bosley back at the premiere, and it turns out that Luke Wilson isn't proposing to Cameron Diaz. Instead, they've got a dog, which is,
he bought her a puppy.
Speaking from experience, is just as much of a commitment as being married to somebody.
I guess the only disappointment is that it didn't end in a dance sequence.
True. I'll take bloopers, though.
Yeah, and this movie has bloopers at the end. Normally, bloopers are the bane of my existence in these kind of films, but I kind of enjoyed these ones. Yeah, they looked like they were having fun, right?
Yeah, genuinely enjoying themselves, and that gave me good feels also.
And I guess that is Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. Would you guys recommend this movie?
Hell yeah!
Yeah! Oddly enough, I would.
If you're missing those good old times of 2003, why not? And Pink.
Yes, oh my God, Pink.
Yeah, I mean, like I've said throughout this episode, I totally recommend this film. I almost feel guilty for choosing it because it's actually way better than I remember. I mean, look, it ain't perfect. It's fucking dumb. It's not the sharpest of stories. It's not the most engaging of stories, but the chemistry between the three leads just fucking carries this film, yeah?
Oh, 100%. Love them.
Well, I feel like I need to do some sit-ups.
That was our episode on Charlie's Angels Full Throttle from the year 2003, directed by McGee. Next week on the show,
we off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Because.
Hell yeah. Until then, you can find us on Twitter at Bad Numbers Pod. You can email the show at bwnpod@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, bwnpod. We have been Bad with Numbers from Toronto, Canada. Stay safe out there. Goodbye.
Bye.
Because.
I hope the angels aren't being too rough on you.
Man, please, I date fat women. Talking about.